The topic that I'll be discussing today is actually a quote from the Buddha, and it goes something like this. I teach only one thing, that is suffering and its end. And I always thought that that quote was interesting, because the Buddha is saying that he's teaching one thing, but then he lists off two things, suffering and its end. So I thought that this was just a mistake from the Buddha. Maybe he wasn't on top of his game that day and misspoke. But of course, he did not misspeak, because this is actually in line with many other quotes that he has said in the past. But you know, I do remember hearing this in another talk from another teacher as I was on the path of Vipassana, and never really understood it until I came to non-duality and the path of knowledge. So again, the Buddha has said something like, samsara is nirvana. There's actually not two there. And the same can be applied to this quote as well, that he teaches one thing, suffering and its end. Those are actually not two things. They're one thing. So actually, the quote makes perfect sense. But I think it's important to go deeper into this, because if we hear that without self-realization, just like I did when I was meditating and listening to talks without true self-realization, then one's going to either think that the Buddha made a mistake, or they're going to misunderstand the quote altogether, just like I did. However, I did hear things such as samsara is nirvana, and you know, peace and freedom is here right now, and that never grasped that either. I always thought that it was more practice that would get me to understand those very seemingly mysterious quotes. But why don't we dive into that initial quote from the Buddha that I teach one thing, suffering and its end. Why don't we dive into that a bit more to truly understand this oneness of suffering and the end of suffering, samsara and nirvana, all of those things. Most of us come to spirituality for that purpose of freedom from suffering, for happiness and freedom. And the Buddha's teachings are particularly attractive because he talks specifically about that in the Four Noble Truths, that there's suffering, there's a cause of suffering, there's an end of suffering, and a path to the end of suffering. Those are the Four Noble Truths. And so we gravitate towards those when we find ourselves in suffering. The other reason is those of us in the West, Buddhism has really become very popular as those rebels in the 50s and 60s went over to Thailand and India and brought back many of the traditions there. And those traditions have been growing steadily since the mid-1900s. You know, a regular layperson who's had no experience with spirituality, they eventually come to spirituality because they find that the life that their society, that their teachers in school, that their parents, all of those things that we looked up to had told us about what life is supposed to be like and how we obtain freedom in this life, we didn't find those to be true. So we went to school, we got a job, we made some money, we got a house, we got some cars, we had nice things, we had children. But there was something missing. There was still suffering, or maybe not to the full extent of suffering, but some discomfort or tension and a desire for freedom. And that's what brought us to potentially the path of knowledge, or many of us in the West, to Buddhism. And that framework I brought up before about suffering, the end, the cause of suffering, end of suffering, and the path to the end of suffering is a nice framework to kind of talk about how we get to that point of samsara being nirvana and the lack of separation between suffering and the freedom from suffering. So we've defined suffering already. So the first noble in the Buddha's schema, we've kind of described that tension, the tension or stress that is derived from what we want and desire in life, that craving, the craving for things that we want, that we think is going to make us happy. We all have that desire for happiness, but we're searching for it in the wrong place. We want things to be a certain way so that we can be happy. So there's that craving. And the Buddha says that in the second truth, that the cause of that stress, the cause of that suffering is actually desires and those cravings. When we go even further into what causes that craving to begin with, the word ignorance begins to come up, and which is one of the links in dependent origination. We're not going to go into that entire process of the Buddha's teaching, but ignorance comes up also as a cause for suffering. And in the path of knowledge, we identify ignorance as the source of suffering. So what is ignorance? It has a few different meanings in different traditions, but ignorance fundamentally is a misunderstanding of who and what we are. We believe ourselves to be separate, to be limited individuals, minds, and bodies. And there's ignorance about who we actually are and what our truth is. And that ignorance drives us to try to obtain happiness for the individual, which ultimately does not last and doesn't give us lasting freedom. So that seems to be the cause of suffering, is this belief in the individual and belief in happiness outside of the individual that lies within our desires and cravings. So when we come to the third truth in this framework, which is the end of suffering, or what he calls in Pali Nibbana or Nirvana in Sanskrit, is the complete extinguishing or blowing out of that craving that leads to suffering. And there's a complete destruction of suffering. So that is the third truth, the end of suffering. So how do we actually get to that end of suffering? And here is where the paths will differ somewhat. And this goes on to the fourth truth, which is there is a path to the end of suffering. And there appears to be differences between the classic Theravadin teaching, the more newer Mahayana, as well as the non-dual and the direct path teaching. So let's say, take for instance the Theravadin tradition, which became very popular in the United States and continues to be. It is focused on the practice of Vipassana, so the ability to watch all that arises in our experience and slowly develop equanimity towards what arises. There becomes disidentification, and we see that that which arises is not us, it's not mine, it's not ourself. So we realize that no self nature. We see that all of these are permanent. We see that they're actually our cause of suffering. So we start to see those three characteristics and what comes up in our experience. And we develop this equanimity towards all that arises. And eventually, the way that this is taught in some by some teachers, is if you do enough meditation, there will be complete extinguish of all experience. And what's left over is nirvana. And there you go. You've found your freedom from suffering. And there's a whole progressive path that will go on from there. But much of what the practice focusing on is this cessation of all experience. But when it is reified in that way, when nirvana is reified as a cessation experience, self, we can talk about that top, those two words together is a bit of an oxymoron, right? Cessation and experience, so you can't use those two together. But many seekers who are progressing without a teacher, or even those that are following some teachers who put a lot of weight into this, will search for that experience, and they will always see themselves as unenlightened or unrealized until it comes. And that was definitely, I practiced for many hours, did tons of studying in the Theravadin tradition, and was always kind of striving and pushing myself to try to get to that point, which was extremely stressful and a source of suffering. So that didn't seem, eventually became a little bit smarter and stopped pushing so hard there. The other thing is that, you know, a lot of us believe that meditation is what's going to get us there, but it actually isn't the meditation itself, it's the realizations that come from looking directly at our experience. So eventually, you know, I found again that doing the constant meditation wasn't getting me to my goal of happiness and freedom. It was actually creating more bondage. And in the direct path, we point directly to the goal or the cessation of suffering rather than meditate, do any other practices. And this can happen in minutes with a particular teacher. When a student with the appropriate qualities, you know, a true interest in spirituality, curiosity, desire for knowledge, critical thinking ability, the ability to analyze the experiences, the quality of attention, if those are present, many spiritual seekers will be able to see the self-knowledge, which brings freedom from suffering in just a few minutes. And the way that that is done is through progressive elimination at times, you know, looking for our true self, the essence, looking for what's permanent within our experience, looking for what's permanent within this existence. And so we start to disidentify, just as in the meditative path, but we immediately, using our direct experience and logic, see that the individual, the thoughts, the feelings, emotions, all of those are changing. What is persistent? Rather than looking at all of the objects in our environment and noting all of the mind states and trying to generate equanimity, we simply turn around and say, who is it that's observing these states of equanimity? Who is it that's meditating? Who is it that's thinking? Who is it that is observing all of this. And we see that it is the experiencer. And the experiencer is devoid of all qualities, of all of the physical, mental qualities that were causing us suffering to begin with. It is a simple, silent witness of all things. And at that point, we can see how freedom from suffering arises. Because freedom is here and now if we are living as ourself, as the experiencer. Suffering is something that occurs within the realm of experience. And we see with direct seeing that we are not those experiences. So there is a freedom from suffering when we see that our true nature is not that which suffers, the individual. It is that which is experiencer or witness of all of it. And that here and now is free. So again, just revisiting our question to begin with so that we stay on track, is that the Buddha said that I teach one thing, suffering and its end. So have we made it to the final point here where we see that it's actually the same, that same suffering that was caused by all of those things that we thought ourselves to, we've determined that we are not those, we are the experiencer, which is free and can observe the wheel of samsara turning on its own. It is free from karma. It is not subject to karma of cause and effect. We've found that, but have we actually answered how they are one? Well, this is where we take the next step. The first step is that self-realization of the experiencer, but the next step is to actually see that that freedom, that experiencer, that infinite witnessing is not separate from that which is appearing. Is there anything to an experience other than the experiencing of that experience? And we have to look closely. Is there a separation there? For instance, the coffee mug in front of you and that which is experiencing the coffee mug. Some people will say, oh yeah, you know, the coffee mug's 5 feet in front of me and I'm sitting here on the couch. That is still within the realm of ignorance because we are taking an appearance, which is our body sitting on the couch, to be the experiencer. But when we've actually eliminated all of the objects and we've said that we are the experiencer of all of those, we see that the experiencer arises with the experience. So wherever there is an experience, the experiencer is there, which creates non-locality, which suggests omnipresence. And we see that there's no separation between those experiences that are arising and the experiencer of them. And we come to non-duality in that way. There's not two. There's not one experiencer and one experience. They're not two. They're one. And that's what we are. That oneness is us. It may be arising and appearing as different forms and objects. And this is where the metaphor of the water and the waves comes into play. The water appears as waves on the surface of the ocean, but is it separate from the waves? Are the waves separate from the water itself? No. So we find that freedom of the experiencer is permeating all things. That is us. There's no separate self that's suffering here. The suffering itself is us. The wheel of samsara is us. And there is only oneness. There's not two. So let's revisit that statement from the Buddha. I teach one thing, suffering and its end. He's saying there is no difference between the two. Samsara is nirvana. There's only one thing. I teach one thing. And that is that suffering is, there's no difference. Suffering is freedom. And so again, when one hears this teaching without self-realization, if they have no idea that they are in fact the experiencer and the whole existence itself rather than the individual mind-body, they're going to think that this statement makes no sense. But once we can walk through that via the direct path, we will come to that conclusion. And I do believe that the same conclusion is actually happening within Theravada and absolutely in Mahayana. But I think what ends up happening is many practitioners become obsessed with that end goal of a cessation experience, and I need that for freedom, which is simply more reification and causes a lot of suffering for the practitioner. And if people want to still meditate, they certainly can. It's actually much more pleasant to meditate with self-knowledge than without. So people can feel free to continue to meditate with self-knowledge and recognizing that, again, freedom is here and now. We can see that as we simply by walking through our direct experience using our logic. The importance of a teacher cannot be overstated here. I thought that I could do all of this by myself, and I think that was a source of suffering too. It really is important for the teacher or the guru to be there to point out your ignorance, because you won't be able to see it without somebody else helping. That is the end of that discussion on samsara and nirvana and the Buddha's quote of teaching one thing, suffering and its end. We didn't get into the Noble Eightfold Path, but that's also a very in discussion for another day that actually also ties in very well with recognition of our true nature. We'll save that for another day. But thank you for this opportunity. Bye.